I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast, a production of The Day Publishing in New London. Today, we're speaking with Mohegan Tribal Chief Lynn Malerba about the tribe's phenomenally successful efforts at nation building since the Mohegans, whose reservation is in Uncasville, Connecticut, was recognized by the federal government as a sovereign nation in 1994. Welcome to the podcast, Chief Malerba. And I would like to start with the basics. When we talk about nation building, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I think that's a great question because, of course, we've always been a tribal nation, but we had a lot of losses after we experienced the first immigrants coming to our shores. And, you know, we lost a lot of our population, and then a lot of our land base was taken from us. But we retained our culture, we retained our government from all of that time, throughout that time. And during the time before we had economic development on our reservation, we paid dues to keep our tribal government going. Each tribal member had to pay dues to keep our tribal government going. And tribes don't tax their citizens, which is how other governments provide services to their citizens. We don't tax our citizens. So economic development was really important to us. And we weren't sure exactly what was going to happen when we got federally recognized. And the reason we went through the process of federal recognition was really to have a seat at the table when the United States was making policy around tribal people and Indian governments, and also to be able to access perhaps some educational dollars through the federal government. Along the way, the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act was passed, which was a happy coincidence for us. And so we were able to have economic development on our reservation, and it was always the lifelong dream of those tribal leaders to be able to provide for their people and also to protect their sacred sites. So nation building is really ensuring that we protect our culture, we protect our history, and that we provide services to our tribal citizens that keep our community healthy in all the important ways. So that would be socially, culturally, physically, and educationally healthy. The first thing we did when we had economic development was to repurchase our burial grounds from the state of Connecticut that had been made into a state park. Can you imagine having your burial ground made into a state park? And that was taken by eminent domain in the 1950s. We also then restored our church, which was integral to our federal recognition process because it was the only parcel of land that was left to us by Mohegan people. And we were very fortunate that those ladies, Lucy Ockham and her daughter, Cynthia Hoscott, left the land to us because that factored heavily into the fact that no, we still had a presence here on our indigenous lands. We then restored our museum, and I was very happily hired to be the Health and Human Services Director for the Mohegan tribe. I was a little nervous about it. And imagine having the tribal council that watched you grow up hire you anyway. That's really a compliment. So the tribal council at that time, my mom was on the tribal council, Sarah Harris, who is now a tribal council. Her dad was the chair of the tribal council at the time, and Ralph Sturgis was our chief, said to me, you need to think about what is going to be most important to our tribal citizens and what services should we be providing. So the first thing we did was to provide elder services and youth services because those are our two very vulnerable populations. So I met with all of the elders who would meet with me. I would invite them in and of course feed them. And, you know, I'd get about 45 minutes of storytelling and then actual information about what they thought was important. And what I asked them to do was to tell me what's most important to you in terms of being able to live independently and stay in your own home. And so we rank ordered all of that, and we implemented that as our elder services program. And not surprisingly, what was it? It was to allow them to be independent and to be safe in their own home. So we mow their lawns and shovel their snow and provide transportation for doctor's appointments when they're no longer able to drive. And we provide in-home care services and all of those wonderful things. And our youth services programs was really about how to gather our children together in ways that, one, celebrate their history and make them connected to their tribal people, but also provide some recreational opportunities. And so that's been really fun. And we're really proud of that program because we do a lot of summer programming. We do summer camps that combine both a traditional recreational camp with a strong cultural component. And what's really wonderful about that is the kids that originally were part of the first summer camps that we offered are now camp counselors and are now college students. And they're coming back and they're engaging with that next generation of kids, which we're just so proud of them for doing that. And then I think the other big focus was education. And so we're able to provide a fabulous education for our tribal children.
Wow, what wonderful support you're giving to all of the generations. That's so great to hear. Talk to me a little bit about the tribe's status as really an international business entity operated by its own people, which all evolved from really the church and the museum on Mohegan Hill in Uncasville, right? So a lot has happened.
It really, in a very short period of time as well. Again, you know, having been immersed in some of those early developmental programs that we did, as well as really understanding what the dream was for that generation behind me, because again, they accomplished this in ways, you know, without a lot of support initially, but they held on, you know, they held on for us and they had such belief in our tribe. And so the fact that we now have two tribal members that are managing both our national portfolio as well as our international portfolio really is their dream realized, that it's really run by our Mohegan people, because who would understand the goals, the needs, and the wants of our tribal community better than our tribal citizens, our own tribal citizens. So we are just in a very, very different place than we were early on. We're very thankful to our early investors and our early managers because they helped eliminate the barriers to successful economic development. And so we will never forget their friendship and their, business acumen and expertise, because they helped shepherd us through some of those early days. But the goal was always to have our tribal members be in leadership positions, and now we're there. So it's really just so exciting.
I remember back in 1996, and then later when I had the opportunity to write about the tribe, you had all these fabulous executives in from the gaming world elsewhere, and you felt like, wow, they were top notch, but they were doing their jobs with the understanding that this was going to be eventually operated by the tribe, and that that they were to lead and instruct and teach tribal members. So was there a career path to, specifically the CEO seat of Mohegan Sun, and then being in charge of the new ventures in Pennsylvania and Las Vegas and elsewhere. Was that sort of a defined trajectory, or was it the people who learned the skills were advanced into those positions?
Right. So we didn't have a shadowing program or anything like that. It really was ensuring that people had the proper education that then would allow them to be in those positions, because we believe that we always want to have the best qualified people in those positions, because that's important. It's important from a business success perspective, but it's also important from, you know, credibility perspective, because, you know, we're really proud of the fact that we were the first tribal nation to have publicly traded bonds on Wall Street. And so we are responsible for reporting out our successes and reporting out our financial status because we have those bonds. And so when I think about Bill Velardo, I think about his mentorship of Bobby Soper. Or I should say Bob Soper. He's a cousin of mine, so of course I use his more casual name. But he worked really hard with Bob. Bob ended up initially as an attorney for the tribal government side. He worked with my sister Jeanette. And then he transitioned to the casino and worked in the casino legal department, and then rose through the ranks in that way. And eventually he was our CEO and president before he left. And then Ray Pino followed a similar trajectory. He was a tribal attorney, went and worked with Mohegan Sun in the legal department there, which of course you touch every piece of the business when you work in the legal department. And then he was our our CEO. Now he is now our CEO, or was the CEO, and now he is in charge of our entire North America portfolio, which is wonderful. So I just, and we currently have Jeff Hamilton, who is also a tribal member, who is the CEO of Mohegan Sun proper. And so we think that we have given a lot of opportunity to our tribal members, but they've had to earn that opportunity. And so we're just couldn't be happier with where all three of them are at.
Wow, how excellent. And for those who don't know, Bill William Velardo was the first, I believe, chief executive of Mohegan Sun on day one, opening day, yes.
And he was very beloved, and he created the culture that we still embrace at Mohegan Sun.
I remember stories that we would write about Bill actually walking around and picking up, you know, trash off the floor or things that were discarded. He just took such great pride in the operation.
He really did. He remembered everyone's names. He had such a knack for that personal touch. And I think that's continued.
If you don't mind, I'd like to turn a little to your own personal story now. I had the privilege of interviewing you in 2010 when you were named chief, but the story began decades before that. Here's what I wrote in that 2010 story. Malerba grew up in Uncasville, where streets and schools are named after her tribal ancestors. She and her husband live here today and regularly host Sunday dinner for the family. She says she loves to be part of the tribe's living history. From little girl, you would take field trips through the woods. Could you tell me a little bit about where you were going and what that meant?
Oh, sure. So, I grew up on Fielding Terrace, which is named after my great-grandfather, who was the Chief Mataga from the 30s to the 50s. A little known factoid, I went to kindergarten at the old Mohegan Firehouse while the Mohegan School was being built. The firehouse is subsequently torn down to make room for the Mohegan Pequot Bridge. Very funny. They'd move all the fire trucks out of the firehouse. We'd have kindergarten and then we'd all go home. I was in the first grade at Mohegan School. So that's how old that school is. And we would walk through the woods to the Tantaquidgeon Museum. And we would do that on an annual basis. And the Tantaquidgeon Museum was developed to not only keep our tribal people connected to our culture, but to educate the community at large. And so it still has that mission to this day. But you would go see Gladys, Tantaquidgeon, who was our medicine woman at the time, and she knew all the Mohegan kids. So if you happened to be, your class was visiting, she would always call you out and make you feel very proud of the fact that she knew your name. We were so proud of, you know, who we were. And we were always members of our community. We always lived side by side by everyone in Uncasville. And we knew most of the Mohegan kids because there were only about 500 Mohegan tribal members during my childhood. Now we've had quite the baby boom lit. But it was a smaller group of people. So we knew each other, and it was a very casual way of knowing each other. For instance, I had two aunts live on my street. My grandmother lived on my street, and two of my mother's cousins lived on my street. So it was a very casual way of knowing one another.
Okay, you're steering me away from you for a minute, but we're going back there. You talked about how the tribe was always a part of the community. And as I was studying up a little bit today, I came across a saying I recognize called the Mohegan Way. What does that mean? What is the Mohegan Way?
Mohegan Way is really making sure that we honor the people that live in our community, Mohegan and otherwise. And so to make sure that we can share some of our successes with the people in our community, which we have done. We have mutual aid agreements with the towns for fire and police. We've done a big water project to make sure there's water redundancy on the lines. You know, we help Mohegan, the school system. And so there's a lot of ways that we contribute besides just economically. Of course, we provide 25% of our slot revenues to the state of Connecticut. But I think the other part of our economic success is that we support about 2,200 other businesses in Connecticut. And those businesses pay taxes and employ people. And so when you think about the multiplying effect of what we've accomplished here, it really does benefit everyone.
I love it. And just a little bit more for my story so we can steer you back on track, Chief. Malerba is at home on Mohegan Hill, but she is just as comfortable meeting with Wall Street executives on behalf of the tribe, speaking in front of the local Chamber of Commerce, or hashing out federal Indian policy in Washington, D.C. Now, you had a full career before you came back to work for the tribe. And could you tell us about that and what persuaded you to come back?
Oh, sure. So I was very happily working at Lawrence Memorial Hospital. I worked my way through school. This was during the time where nurses wore caps and, you know, white shoes and stockings, and patients actually had ashtrays by the bedside for their smoking convenience. So it was a very different time, but I never wanted a career that didn't have an impact on other people. And so this was the perfect career for me. And so I specialized in cardiology and critical care nursing, and eventually was a director of cardiology and pulmonary services at Lawrence Memorial Hospital. Loved it, loved it. Everything I thought I'd retire from. You know, L&M, everybody works there forever. And the vice president for patient care services position was available, and I was, you know, really working toward that goal when the tribal council said, no, we think you should come work with us. And I'm like, you don't understand here. I've been working for a long time to be the vice president. But at the end of the day, I made the decision with my heart, not my head, and said, if I really want to contribute to the tribe and to be able to engage fully with our tribal community, I need to leave. And so I left in 1997. And, you know, so I've had these two careers now. One was nursing, and that's why my name is Chief Many Hearts. Our medicine woman bestowed that name upon me. And she said, well, you've held many hearts in your hands in the past. And now as the chief, you hold our hearts in your hands. So it was the perfect name. I carry that forward proudly. And so I developed all of the programs that we now experience with the tribe, and was really honored to be able to do that. When my mom retired from tribal council, you know that then I was on tribal council as the vice chair and then the chair, and then was happily appointed chief. But the one thing you probably don't know about me was that I was very, very shy growing up as a child. And so to have this whole other career and to be able to do the things that I've been able to do and to give voice to perhaps other tribal nations that have less of a voice at the federal level has been very satisfying to me.
I love to hear that. And the Mohegan tribe has a very rich history of having women in key positions. You were the first, I believe, female chair of the tribal council?
Yes, yes.
And then, of course, are you the first chief?
Actually, I am not. We had a chief in the 1700s. I'm very proud of this fact, too, that I'm the second. That we had a chief for a brief time in the 1700s, Anne Uncas, who was the chief. There was a big dispute among the tribal nation about who should be the rightful chair. And I think she kind of just kind of stepped into the chasm for a little while until that got figured out. But long before women could vote, long before women could hold offices, our female leaders would go with male delegations to the Connecticut Assembly and to advocate for good policy for our tribes in Connecticut. It's always been our tradition to have men and women. And if you go into our federal recognition exhibit in our government building, there's an equal number of women honored on that wall as there are men, the people that got us through federal recognition. I think that's just a wonderful legacy.
Many of us who live in this area, of course, know about Gladys Tantaquidgeon, the medicine woman who lived into her hundreds. I think it was 103
yes.
or 104.
106. Yes.
And I know there was a Fidelia Fielding who was very significant in terms of the language that you are trying to restore and recover, or perhaps you're further along in that than I realize, which brings me around, and I think we'll have to conclude here, to the concept of 13 generations. When we spoke with Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Chairman Rodney Butler, he told us about that tribe's tradition of preparing for the next seven generations. The Mohegans talk about 13 generations. Would you explain what that means exactly?
Well, sure. And actually, my generation is 13 generations away from Chief Uncas, who was our great late chief. And also, interestingly, symbolically, there are 13 moons in the year. There are also 13 segments on the turtle's back, on the turtle shell. And we believe that this is Turtle Island, that our nation was created on the back of a turtle. That's our creation story. So there's a lot of symbolism that goes along with that. And we know that, we are just, if you know the trail of life, you've seen it on, with the ups and downs and the little dots around that. And, we are just one dot on that trail of life, each and every one of us. But so it's up to us to honor our ancestors and to look back to what they wanted for their tribal community and to carry that forward. But it's also incumbent upon us to leave footsteps on the path for those next generations. And so that's how we see our role in those 13 generations, making sure that those next generations can not only find their way easily, but they are able to ensure that their heart is with Mohegan, and that we have a foot in both worlds. We all know this, but that they are responsible to those next generations as well. And as my daughter said in an interview recently, she said, well, it's up to us to be good ancestors now, because we will be the ancestors at some point in time. So let's make sure what we're doing reflects and allows those next generations to live in a very comfortable way too.
Wow. I love that, taking all the rich history of the past and making the most of it today, so that the future generations, will be prosperous and continue the Uncasville tradition of the Mohegans. Is there anything that we didn't talk about in this very wide-ranging discussion that you would like to add?
I guess I would just say that, we're just so fortunate and blessed, in Mohegan, but we are also fortunate and blessed because we have had such good neighbors throughout time. Despite having to struggle, we found our way and we held on, and we're lucky that the people that came before us held on and held on to their values, their traditional values. The fact that we have Fidelia Fielding's written words still is why we will be able to restore our language. So we definitely owe a debt of gratitude to all of our ancestors.
All right. Well, thank you, Chief, for this very special interview. We so appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to see you, Karen. And thank you so much for having me today.